Reviewer Jacob Blickenstaff maintains a mind uncluttered by assumptions when observing the latest Hollywood depiction of Sherlock Holmes.
The new Sherlock Holmes film, starring Robert Downey Jr. as Holmes and Jude Law as Dr. Watson, is the latest in a long line of film and television depictions of the classic detective. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle wrote 60 Holmes stories, including four novels, between 1897 and 1927. Although not based on any of the stories written by Doyle, this film includes several of the incidental characters and references to events in a few of the famous stories. As the movie opens, Holmes catches a serial killer, Lord Blackwood. The film then jumps forward several months to find Holmes despondent over Watson's impending departure from their rooms at 221B Baker Street and his engagement to Mary Morstan. Apparently at loose ends, Holmes experiments on a pistol silencer, testing it indoors to the discomfort of Watson's patient and the resident landlady when it does not work. Blackwood, who received a death sentence at trial, is executed, but appears to rise from the grave and break out of his tomb, causing panic in London.
Sherlock Holmes, you and I are bound together on a journey that will twist the very fabric of nature. Allow me to enlighten you. Tomorrow, the world as you know it will end.
Well,
there isn't any time to waste then.
Blackwood seems to be using black magic in an attempt to gain control of the British Empire. He eliminates two enemies through apparently magical means, securing a number of allies in high government positions. Holmes and Watson, working with Irene Adler, played by Rachel McAdams, and Inspector Lestrade, Eddie Marsden, hunt for clues to explain how Blackwood performed these feats. The final confrontation on the nearly completed Tower Bridge brings Blackwood to justice, of course, and leaves the possibility of a sequel wide open. The idea that Holmes uses science to explain events others see as supernatural is not unique to this film. In one of Doyle's most famous novels, The Hound of the Baskervilles, Holmes investigates a mysterious creature with glowing eyes that appears on the moors of southwestern England. Though some believe it to be a supernatural creature fulfilling a curse on the Baskerville family, Holmes establishes the creature as a large dog with a phosphorus compound painted round its eyes and mouth. White phosphorus glows as the element slowly oxidizes, which would be quite a dramatic effect on a dark English moor. In this new story, Holmes again uses scientific detection to try to solve the crime. He collects data and then looks for patterns and connections. Holmes cautions Dr. Watson against theorizing in advance of the facts, making the point that thinking we know the result we are looking for can influence what we see. Students designing an experiment in an inquiry-based science class should be similarly cautioned. Scientific questions are supported by a theory, but the investigator must accept the data collected, not discard it if it does not fit the theory. Holmes drinks a drugged 1858 Margaux wine in the film, which he refers to as a comet vintage. There's a long-standing tradition among winemakers that wines produced when a significant comet was observed are particularly good, though there is no reason that a comet would actually affect the growth or maturation of the grapes. This is an example of the kind of thinking Holmes cautions against. If we have in mind that comet vintages are better than others, we'll remember the years that fit that pattern and forget the ones that do not. Late in the film, Blackwood attempts to use a radio signal to set off his doomsday device, and though Holmes is able to thwart the plan, the radio signal basically works. I initially thought the filmmakers were rather fancifully moving 20th century technology into the late 19th century. However, Nikola Tesla publicly demonstrated a wireless radio transmitter in 1893, making it plausible for Blackwell to use a similar tool in his plot. Electrical devices appear in one of the home laboratories Holmes and Watson uncover, including a metal fork with a wooden handle that seems to be able to store a very large charge. Holmes is able to use this as a primitive electroshock weapon in a fight against a much larger opponent. Capacitors have existed since the 18th century, then known as Leyden jars or condensers, and modern capacitors can certainly store lethal amounts of energy, but Sherlock's fork is an unlikely weapon for the 19th century. In contrast to the proto-electroshock weapon, the home laboratories depicted in the film are quite realistic. Many of the scientific advances in chemistry and physics of the 18th and 19th centuries came about through the investigations in private home laboratories of wealthy men. Universities were not centers of scientific study at the time, instead largely focusing on languages, history, philosophy, and mathematics. The addition of science to high school and college programs is a 20th century development. Irene Adler is a character from the original stories and the only woman to have outwitted Holmes, as Watson points out in the film.
Nice touch.
I was simply studying your methods, should the authorities ask me to hunt you down.
I appreciated her inclusion, not least because she's able to physically defend herself through most of the movie. She reminded me of the New Woman of the late 19th and early 20th centuries, an advocate for women's suffrage and rational dress, that is, discarding corsets and bustles for trousers and other less restrictive clothing. Science teachers could use the latest Sherlock Holmes film to spark a conversation about the history of science, the interaction of theory and observation, and the beginnings of forensic science.
Are we in trouble?
For more of Dr. Blickenstaff's reviews, go to the NSTA website and search for Blick on Flicks.